Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
I can't wait to get into some combine talk. We got more Kings here, but I do need to talk some combine talk, because I saw actually Xavier Worthy. I saw his first run live. We were just hanging out whenever that was, Saturday. Saw the first run live, and I thought, man, that dude is cooking. And then for some odd reason, changed the channel to something. Maybe it's golf, because I'm getting in the mood for my trip this weekend. Chris got you Friday, by the way. He will take care of you, as I will be in Scottsdale. But Xavier Worthy starts cooking again, and he breaks the record. And I don't know if you saw it, Chris, but he was moving. But again, these wide receivers, it's just different these days. This kid is like 6-something and maybe 180.
Yeah, it looks like Devontae Smith.
It's just a different time.
Yeah.
They're literally, where is the beef?
Yeah.
Where is the beef? Where is it these days?
It's not there. Yeah, I don't know, because I saw him run too, and I was like, he looks like the Applejack Cinnamon Man, like a mascot or something. Like, he's so skinny, and it's, you know, I feel like back in the day, even like 15, 20 years ago, it just would have been, that kid's going to get murdered if he tries to catch a ball going across the middle. And it's different. He was ridiculously fast. It makes sense. He didn't have much weight pulling him. So it was incredible to see. Combine, this is probably the most I've watched it in the past couple years. But even I used to watch the combine like it was must-see television when I was in high school and in grade school before that. But maybe it's the way the landscape has gone. I just am struggling to find what the use in all of this is. It feels like we've gotten to the point where we all acknowledge none of these numbers matter. Like, I mean, maybe for confirmation bias, but I don't think anybody is, you know, NFL Network's always going to do their biggest risers after the combine. Like, I don't know how much that concept really truly exists anymore.
I guess if it's right, because the whole thing is,
you got Caleb Williams not doing nothing.
He didn't do anything.
You got Marvin Harrison Jr.
literally
not talking.
Yeah, Bryce Young had a backpack on the whole combine last year, and he went number one.
Yeah, exactly.
So I do think there's a group where the combine won't seem as illustrious in a couple years, because I just think the top picks just won't go.
Yes.
If you're Caleb Williams and you're not going to throw.
It's like a bowl game almost.
Right. Now, Michael Penix Jr., been in the league been in college a long time, had some injury issues. He's trying to, if you're trying to raise your stock.
JJ McCarthy was there.
Right. If you're trying to raise your stock, you go to the combine. If you're pretty sure you're going top 10 and it can't help you at all, because all Caleb Williams can do is.
Marvin Harrison, same thing.
Exactly, is lower it. Yep.
He actually ran slower than I thought.
Exactly.
Oh, he actually kind of dropped some balls there.
You know what it is.
Not as explosive as what I thought.
So, hey, you got me on tape. It is what it is.
Yeah. Spencer Rattler, a
dude who needed to go.
Yes, he needed the Senior Bowl. He needs the combine.
He needs all of it.
He needs all of it.
I think that's what it's going to turn into, and I still think it's interesting, but he probably wishes he had a faster time there. And then you got to do it all over again for pro day.
Right, exactly. And what do pro days tell us too? Because nowadays, like the pro days are pretty much like a recital where it's like, okay, these guys have literally practiced these exact routes in this exact manner for this exact amount of time for the past month. And what really are you seeing besides it's a recital. It's just a performance at that point. You're not even really gauging anything because it's been so prepared and so meticulously designed that it's like, okay, Caleb Williams is throwing to his favorite people in his favorite building, with all of the circumstances working in his favor. I don't know. I mean, it's a good show. It's great for, NFL Network can run it all weekend and you can tune in at any time. I don't know truly, like, I feel like NFL scouts go and they just, I mean, it's just a time to banter about, right? Like, you guys are just talking with each other. It really sounds to me like it's more of a networking event than actually seeing what's happening on the field. To me, that's for the fans now and everything else. Like, the true combine is the conversations had in the, in the stands and the dinners had after and, you know, going out to get drinks until 3 a.m. talking with scouts and GMs and coaches and really seeing, you know, where everybody falls. I don't know how much the underwear Olympic part of it really matters anymore.
Yeah, I think it is right. If you're just watching with nothing on the line and you want to see some people that were highly favored by whoever you believe helped to create humans, it's fun to watch it's these specimens, but as far as how much it's shaping the NFL, watchability is not great.
I mean, it used to make or break people.
Right.
You know, like it used to be you have a bad combine, you might fall from a late first to like an early third round pick, and you know, that's more so with quarterbacks, but like it used to truly matter what you did, and it just feels like we've gotten to the point with analytics, with the availability of tape and film and all of it, where it's like, you know, Marvin Harrison's totally right to say, I'm a football player. Like, what does me, you know, doing the shuttle drill have anything to do with me? Like you said, like, it's only going to end up hurting my stock. There's no point in me showing you anything because everything that needs to be seen, I've put on tape.
And then did you see the report of Marvin Harrison missing? He was supposed to show up for an appearance and did not do that.
So from what I understand, he just didn't show up.
Yeah.
Like, it was a, hey, Marvin Harrison set to speak at 145. 143 comes around. NFL, you know, PR people come to the podium and say, hey, yeah, Marvin's not going to speak today. And that was it. And that just was it. And so he didn't plan on measuring. He didn't plan on doing anything at the combine and pretty much, I guess, talked to a couple teams and then just dipped out. So, and it's, you know what the thing is, though? Again, that's not going to hurt his draft stock at all. Because he's like, what is talking to the media, what is answering these questions going to do for me? Except for, you know, maybe they ask me, are birds real or do I believe in space? And then it ends up becoming an internet clip, and I fall from 4 to 7, you know? It can only hurt him.
Keeping it in the college ranks, Caitlin Clark
shows
up in a big way, breaks Pete Maravich's scoring record in all of college. And I watched probably 80% of that game.
Beats the number two team in the nation.
The number two team in the nation, Ohio State. We've talked a lot on this show about the future of college basketball as it pertains to men's and women's. And right now, my wife brought this up when we were discussing March Madness brackets, right?
It's getting that time, man.
I know. We've never done a women's bracket with the rest of our buddies, right? Could this be the first year where I think men's will still be, it's just what people are used to. I think men's will still be marketed more and more brackets will go in and you do the pools with your friends or your coworkers. But could this be the first season where you see, I guess, an uptick in women's hoops brackets, filling them out and watching? Because I'll argue that there are way more brand names and big names now in women's college basketball. And that's what you're tuning in to watch.
Yeah.
I think the transfer portal has destroyed men's college basketball.
Completely.
Worse than football.
Yeah.
Did you guys see Katie during the Minnesota broadcast mention that I believe that stadium was holding or arena was holding the champion or both and the women's has sold out, but the men's hasn't yet.
For the national, for the Natty?
For the Final Four.
For the Final Four. Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy. I mean same capacity, right? Same like there's no difference in
they allow like the same amount of seats or whatever seats. It is.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that's kind of that blew my mind a little bit.
It was that way last year too. Last year the women's Final Four drew more at least in terms of the ticket prices was way higher than the men's. And the men's last year was like UConn, San Diego State. That's it. That's all I got. I know that was the final. So that's all I've got.
Why has the transfer portal affected men's and not women's?
It's just, I mean, you have to carry over year over year. And like, you know, it has helped the women's game.
Wait, do the women not have it?
No, they do.
They do.
Shout out Haley Van Lith.
Yeah. Because LSU's trying to do something. I think what it is that ultimately the WNBA, I think women's sports in general, specifically if we're keeping it to basketball, women's sports have led to women, I guess, there's less movement because if women put more weight on, in my opinion, on getting a degree and finishing school versus, I think women are more realistic I think if you haven't played that much, you might look in the mirror and say, okay, do I want to go to this other school so I have a chance to play in the WNBA, or I'm going to stay here with my team and my friends and maybe it's close to family, whatever it is, and I'm just going to finish. Whereas men's sports, everybody believes they're going to the league.
Yeah.
So I will go to four different schools until somebody tells me what I want to hear.
I think the finances, too, probably play into that a lot with NILs and people moving.
That's also true.
And being like, yeah, the NBA is generational wealth, or essentially can be, and maybe the WNBA is not there right
now. You're living pretty, but it ain't going to change.
Different mindsets,
the trajectory of your life. It's not going to change the trajectory of
your children's children.
Your children's children.
Right. Well, and it all plays into the fact that, just in general, too, I mean, women's game has their characters stay for longer. Like, you can build the story of Caitlin Clark from sophomore year through senior year, whereas if you were to have a similar case in men's college basketball, you could maybe do a similar sophomore to senior year, but the difference is he probably spent his sophomore year at Duke, then went to, you know, Maryland for his junior year, and then went to Kentucky for his senior year. You don't get the attachment, which is the big thing about college sports.
It's
gone now. You knew, okay, I know what Duke's going to look like next year. I know Christian Laettner's still going to be there. I know Grant Hill is going to spend some time there. And so I have some time to kind of build up the story, build my relationships with those people. And now, you know, it's a year and the guy's gone, whether it's going to the NBA or going to a new situation. You have guys like Hunter Dickinson, who started at UNC and is now at Kansas. Like, it's just in the men's game, even if you do stay for 4 years, you're not going to stay at the same place for 4 years.
And the other thing is, on top of the one and done, that also got affected because of G League.
Yeah.
So you don't even have Zion Williamson's coming through for 1 year.
Yeah.
So you don't even get the one-year pandemonium. I can tell you right now, Chris, I can name one men's basketball player off the top of my head. Armando Bacot.
Okay, I was like, as long as it's not Bronny James.
Okay. Bronny and Armando Bacot. You know why? Because it feels like Armando Bacot has been at UNC for 7 years.
He sure has.
That's the only reason.
He has been there for 6 years.
I could probably name 10 women's players right now. And I'm not necessarily seeking it out.
Players, right.
It's just they have
the
storylines.
They're in the conversation. Absolutely.
And men's college basketball does not have the storylines right now. When we return, we are talking Bulls. They are stuck in purgatory, and how the Kings don't ever find themselves in the same situation. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Yeah, college basketball, it's a big problem, and it's kind of sad. You know, we have plenty of time to talk college hoops. It's my favorite time of year still, March Madness. I got two W's under my belt as far as picking the correct team. I picked UConn.
Really?
I picked UConn with Kemba.
Okay.
And I think I picked UConn again.
College baseball.
It wasn't last season, but UConn did win last season. But I know I got two under my belt. And for sure the first Kemba one. It might have been both UConns. The Kemba one and then the Shabazz Napier one.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I forgot about that.
UConn just randomly just wins.
Just every couple, like, 8 years or so. They just pop up.
Pencil them in. But we will definitely have, and don't do any homework, Chris. You can't do,
here's
a rule.
This
is what we're going to do when we get closer to March Madness.
It's in a couple weeks.
We will try
2 weeks.
It's nuts. Yeah. It's nuts. We will try to name, see how many college basketball players both of us can name. You can watch more, but you can't.
Right. Right.
Go Google a bunch of names the week before. This is honor system here. So we will play that game because I think it's a problem.
I'm honestly doing some preliminary thinking, and I'm at like
I got
two.
Bacot.
I'm at two.
I got, and what, a Paige's son?
Oh, there's four. Okay.
Paige's son.
My list is getting longer.
Bronny
Maybe we
James.
Should have it be Nepo babies excluded.
No, then we're not going to
have. There's no juniors, no
We're not going to have any. Yeah, you can just guess. There are a couple. You're like, Scottie Pippen Jr., he's still in there? No, he's in the NBA.
Martin Jr.?
Kenyon Martin, he's still in there?
Okay.
It is a problem, and we will discuss as we get closer to March Madness. Is it a problem, though, when your team doesn't stink but is also not going anywhere?
Yeah.
And you got the Chicago Bulls on line one. LaVine, whether it was nobody wanted him or he was actually injured, he gets shut down. You did not move anyone.
No.
You did not move anyone. You didn't move DeRozan, who could have helped out somebody.
Expiring.
Right? You did not move LaVine. You did not move Caruso. And we gave a lot of flack to the Raptors, who they did this for about 3 years, it felt like. This is year two, I would say, of the Bulls just existing.
Floundering, yes.
What do you do? And how do you avoid being in this position?
You avoid being in this position by locking up yourself financially. Just period. Having no outs is going to put you in this situation. When you pay Zach LaVine, it's been a while since we looked at the contract.
It was
like $48 million per year. And then you're paying Vucevic $20+ million, and you're paying DeRozan $20+ million. You have nowhere to go. Like, that is your team, and that's why where my hesitancy was a bit for the Kings to just throw their names into Jeremy Grant trade rumors, because that's your core, and you don't get any better than what those guys bring you. And so, you know, with Zach LaVine kind of reaching a ceiling pretty early, and then just getting hurt and getting hurt and getting hurt. They never were able to build a team around them. It's a story as old as time, too. Messed up your draft picks. Like, Coby White just now starting to look like a really, really solid NBA player, but took him 3 to 4 years to get there. Patrick Williams, that's a dude that they took a risk on, took him third or fourth in the draft.
He was one of my guys.
He just hasn't panned out. Like, yeah. I mean, it makes sense. There was the Kawhi Leonard comps for him, and it never panned out. I mean, whether it's him playing and never really figuring out his offense, or just the fact that he's been pretty much injured for 2.5 seasons, they just haven't really gotten the guys that they needed to pop. And then, you know, they also had Billy Donovan, who has been good, not great. They had who was the Iowa State coach before that I've completely forgotten about. They were super high on. It just hasn't worked out for them. And yeah, they ended up cap locking themselves to the point where they can't get better, and until they refuse to just rebuild, I mean, they're going to be trapped here, because they're not bad. They're not terrible. They don't have, they have talent, but at the same time, they're not competing with the Celtics. They're not competing with the Knicks or the Cavs or any of those teams. They're going to be, I think them and the Hawks are the two teams that have pretty much been in this zone for like the last 3 or 4 years, and just, they think that they can add one more piece to get them out of it, but instead they just kind of need to blow it up.
So is that what they're saying by not moving anyone, that they're going to be active over the offseason and look for what's missing? Because that's how you end up in this situation. That is how you end up in this situation.
Stubbornness, really.
Zach, well, underperforming.
Yeah.
You made gambles and it didn't add up for you. DeMar DeRozan, if you told somebody DeMar DeRozan, Alex Caruso, Vucevic, Coby White, Zach LaVine, Andre Drummond, all on a team, you'd say, yeah, I'm listening. Yeah. And then the East is getting less top heavy, but in an East that is nowhere near as strong as the West, you're in the play-in.
Right.
You got jumped over. So at this point in time, the Magic should not, based on the moves that you made, this is where they messed up, or this is where they see themselves. The Cavs, who have jumped multiple teams, I would say, even though Donovan Mitchell is just probably the most confusing star in the league, but they're not upset about the Celtics, the Bucks. I'd say it's hard to be upset about the Knicks, because you know the Knicks are always going to try to do something. And the Sixers. Those four teams, I think the Bulls would say, hey, fine, whatever. We're like a 5-6 situation. That's where we see ourselves. When you get jumped by the Cavs, you get jumped by the Heat, you get jumped by the Magic, and you get jumped by the Pacers, that is where the issue happens.
Because
the Magic, they have not hit their stride yet. They're still young. The Cavs are still figuring it out. and they're balling this season. The Cavs are more established, I would say. They lost last season. The Pacers. Now the Pacers make a move. Now, and this is why, this is how I bring this back to the Kings, because it comes at you fast, Chris. And the Bulls were never the three seed or anything like that. But the three seed, that's long gone. That doesn't matter now. You can look up and say, oh, wow, the Thunder, this wasn't a flash in the pan situation. They're back. The Nuggets are not going anywhere. The T-Wolves, they're not going anywhere. The Clippers, they're not going anywhere. And you can look around and say, can you believe that we were a three seed a couple years ago and now we're stuck fighting for a play-in every season?
Yeah.
It can be dicey.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I know what I just said, but it's also, you know, the Bulls kind of put themselves in this situation by standing pat, too. Mm-hmm. I know I said, like, you don't want to be too aggressive and mm-hmm. go get Jerami Grant, but also, you got to be willing to move on from these guys. Yeah. Like, that's the thing that the Kings have to be willing to do. Like you're saying, teams will just straight up leapfrog you.
Yeah.
And if you just stand there, stand pat, you're gonna get leaped over, and teams aren't going to wait for you. And so you know, yes, absolutely. The Bulls are a great cautionary tale for the Kings of if you're going to spend your money, make sure you're spending it on guys that you think is right. But at the same time, if you feel like things aren't going, don't just stick with what's worked or what you think is going to work just for the sake of stability. Sometimes you got to take risks. And all the teams you just listed, the Magic, they had to get the first pick of the draft to eventually get over the top. The Pacers, they had to make the Sabonis trade. They had to go get Haliburton. You've got to be active if you want. You say it all the time. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And so that's really what ended up happening with the Bulls is they thought Zach LaVine was going to be their guy. He kept getting hurt, never really elevated. DeMar DeRozan, later point in his career, they just never really got better. And there's so many teams that leapfrog them that now they're just kind of sitting here twiddling their thumbs, wondering, what do we do next? Do we go out and try and continue to build on this thing? Or do we trade off Zach LaVine to the Lakers for Rui Hachimura, D'Lo, and a first-round pick, and just say, you know what, our hands are clean of this, and we're going to try and get better in 2 or 3 years. Like, it's a really tough situation, and obviously the Kings are trying to avoid anything that has to do with thinking about draft picks for a very long time.
Right. And, you know, I want the Kings to look at this game tonight very similar to what is it with Scrooge when it's the ghost of Christmas past and Christmas present and Christmas future. I want them to say, I want Monty McNair to be down there.
Yeah.
And look at the Bulls and just realize, hey, man, this could be
this
you.
Could be you, yeah.
And if it is you, I don't know how much longer you'll have a job.
Yeah.
So very important to, one, win this game. Whatever happens this season, we know where the King's ceiling is. But this offseason, as much as you can do, we understand the market. We get all that. But you make the wrong moves, and the next thing you know, you're on the outside looking in, trying to fight off what is inevitable. And inevitably, the Bulls are going to have to blow this thing up.
They've got to.
When we get back, new rules for the NFL, more games. Is there any reason to play more football games other than football's like pizza?
Money.
At least that's what we hear. Also, an injury to someone on the Suns, surprise, surprise, could shake up the landscape of the Western Conference bottom tier. Stiles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
This is Sacktown Sports.
Devin Booker is expected to be sidelined for at least 7 to 10 days due to a right ankle sprain. The Clippers also will be without Russell Westbrook for a period of time.
Just mispronounce his name?
Careful, man.
Dude, that's so disrespectful.
Russell, you know, to be fair,
so
his name,
come on.
I think what would it be? What would it be called? Somebody a speech
like impediment?
Not an impediment, but his name is kind of hard to say. The R's and the W's together.
Alliteration.
Kind of, right? Russell Westbrook.
It is hard. Yeah, you want to drop the R with the W.
And that's right.
It's like when little kids are like,
Michael Strahan would have.
I'm just wondering.
Mess with that name.
Yeah.
Wondering.
I'm Russell, just wondering when.
Russell Westbrook?
You ever see the kid at the Minecraft convention who's like.
I cannot say that.
I was wondering how much detonated wham. You never seen that one?
No.
Okay, that's a classic internet. Classic.
Anyways, sorry. Russell Westbrook, tough day.
Yeah, tough day for Russell. And also, as we started on Devin Booker rolling his ankle, and KD had some things to say about the double teams that are obviously going to show up. You know, you talked about the guys, Chris, that you can't double team in Luka and Shea, guys like that. Someone you can definitely double team is Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant doesn't seem to have the ability to get out of the double team like some of the, because he's not the same type of playmaker. He's a scorer.
No, yeah, he's never really been a passer.
Yeah, and he was asked after the game about it, and he just said, I can't really get going when guys are just coming right at me, and there's two of them
right
every single time I touch the ball. So 7 to 10 days for Devin Booker. The Suns already lost yesterday to the Thunder, right? So you look at the Western Conference, and the Suns are probably the team that I think you had picked the Suns as a team that was going to fall off a cliff here.
Yes.
So the Suns are behind the Kings right now. They are the 7th seed, and this is who they have coming up next, and they will not. So 7 to 10 days, they definitely won't have Devin Booker when they go to Denver tomorrow.
Definitely.
They definitely will not have Devin Booker when they host the Raptors. And then they most likely won't have Devin Booker when they host the Celtics on Saturday. Now, that's
and Bradley
rough.
Beal's also out.
And so the Kings, once you get in front of somebody, that's how the Kings need to look at this. Once you get in front of somebody, we shouldn't even do pocket watching on teams. You can do pocket watching on teams that are around them, sure. But in theory, you really should just be pocket watching teams in front of the Kings. That's what this should be. Because if the Kings, the only time you got to look at other teams is when the Kings lose, right? If the Kings lose, you're worried about the teams behind you. The Kings
win. They lose a lot. That's the problem.
Well, hopefully not tonight.
Hopefully not. I mean, yeah, hopefully they're past the losing to bad teams portion of the schedule. But, I mean, the reason why we've had to pay so much attention to all of these teams is because, I mean, yeah, in theory, the Kings take care of business. And, you know, once they get in front of teams, they don't look back. But the problem has been, for every two steps forward, it's arguably two steps back. And so, you know, hopefully we are past that point. But at this point in time, right now, I think you still have to look around them.
That's fair. I also think that if you're looking at this thing right here, the Suns are probably cooked with this Devin Booker injury. So we
Devin
talked to
Booker. That's a great Freudian slip
Devin Booker injury. You have, like we said, you go to Denver, you host the Raptors, you host the Celtics, then you go to Cleveland, then you go to Boston, you get a break with the Hornets, then after that, you go to Milwaukee.
That's a gauntlet.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And yeah, like you said, they're not going to have, probably won't have Booker for most of those, if not all of those. And then even if, you know, Beal comes back, he's not going to be 100% healthy. And it's a lot of weight on KD's shoulders. Also, Grayson Allen has fallen off a cliff here recently. He was absolutely on a flamethrower and then has really calmed down since. So if it's going to be KD and and the guys, it's not going to go well for Phoenix. I mean, they don't have enough. And, you know, we don't talk about it enough, but KD's up there, man. KD's, what, 34, 35 years old. He can't be shouldering this weight anymore. He cannot be shouldering this level of weight. And he talked about being double-teamed. That's what Devin Booker's out there for, man, is to take the pressure off of him. And I'm sorry, but Grayson Allen and
Beal,
Eric Gordon,
Beal,
he's not back yet. But he's, I mean, when he comes back.
On the way.
He's on the way. And
it might be too little too late.
You still got to get him integrated into, like, the actual offense, because it feels like Bradley Beal has played 20 games this year.
That
and
sounds
so,
right. Eric Gordon is 35 years old.
That's another
as well.
One, too. It's like you can't be relying on these guys at this point in the season to be carrying the weight of the season on their backs, especially not when they're in this close of a playoff race, too. I mean, And then you throw on the fact that the Suns have the toughest remaining schedule.
Yeah, this is insane.
It's not looking good for our Phoenician friends, man.
Yeah, this is not looking good at all. They still have, after what I just read off, they get a couple breaks. They do host the Sixers, who you can't really sleep on them. The Suns in April. Listen to this, Chris. This is how the Suns end the season. April 1st, they go to New Orleans.
Okay. Tough one.
Next game, they host the Cavs again.
Another tough
one. Next game, they host the Timberwolves.
Next game,
they host the Pelicans. Next game, they host the Clippers. Next game, they go to the Clippers. Next game, they host the Kings. And then they end the season by, or sorry, they go to Sacramento. And then they end the season by having to go to Minnesota in April. They're done. We don't have to talk about the Suns anymore. They're done. It is Devin Cooker. It's Devin Cooker now. They're done.
Oh, my gosh. That's a slow
insane.
Cooker right there. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
that's
done.
A wrap. Like, and to play two games against the Pelicans, who they're probably going to be directly competing with, that is terrible. Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. The Suns are done. Yeah, I don't think we need to talk about them again. I mean, and, you know, if they do win, it's going to be a great statement to maybe how good their ceiling is. But, man, I cannot see them. They're probably going to finish in the play-in at that point. I mean, they would be my favorites to finish eighth, knowing all of that. That's insane.
And if you're the Suns, you're praying that you just get healthy and you can go to, hopefully, you're the Suns, you hope that, I don't know who you'd rather face between the Warriors and the Lakers. Warriors and Lakers, one of them will probably be Lakers Suns. In the play-in, that in the bottom in the 9-10 play-in,
to have Kevin Durant, LeBron James, and Steph Curry as the 8-9-10, if that doesn't tell you about the passing of the torch of where this league is going to, that's ridiculous. I mean, for those three guys specifically, it used to be they're on your team, you're winning 50-plus games regardless of whatever. You could have Delonte West playing next to LeBron. He's going to get you 50 wins. And the fact that that's just no longer the case, I mean, it's a great sign for the league, but B, it's just insane that we've lived long enough to see the point where having Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and LeBron really only guarantees you an end-of-play-in situation. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and not to mention, based on us assuming that would put your guy Luka Doncic in that 7th seed.
Yeah.
And now it's got me thinking, Chris, just as far as the ratings, you would see, is this going to be a weird time in the NBA where obviously urgency, only one game, two games, these play-in games, because of the star power, they're going to do better than
numbers than the
first round games.
Yeah,
they might do better than up until you get to the finals.
It seriously might. I mean, if you have Luka, KD, LeBron, and Steph in all of those, some combination of all of those guys, people are tuning in. If you're getting LeBron versus Steph, and then either Steph versus KD, or LeBron versus KD, or LeBron versus Luka, people are tuning in regardless. And those, like you said, the urgency of it, the one game playoff, the thing we're going to be talking about is the in season tournament. Like, the play in is really where the NBA found gold.
Yeah,
that would be insane, and I would be right here for it. I just hope that the NBA, which I assume they would do, but put those things on Friday and Saturday at primetime times, and you're probably getting your most viewed television broadcast of the season, because you're completely right. That is must-see TV, and you might even see a weird situation where maybe the league tries to fix it so that Luka is the 7th seed, because, you know, it's a lot better to just kind of get that entire drama than, oh, the Pelicans or the Kings actually slipped into the 7th seed. That's just not as juicy as getting all of those big marquee guys.
The NBA has a problem with the Pelicans, because Zion hasn't played enough to be marketable. Yeah. I just don't think we talk about De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox's expectations were nothing like Zion Williamson. Yeah. And Zion Williamson doesn't even get mentioned as far as face of the league. And that was something where I think everybody thought this is a lock for a guy. And he just, besides some stories about baby mama drama and his beef and their
more than a little story.
Well, and their beef with Stephen A. Smith, the Pelicans. The Pelicans are probably a thorn. They're more of a thorn in the NBA side than the Kings, for sure.
They have been for a while, too. I mean, from David Stern having to literally take over the team and then veto the Chris Paul trade to them having Chris Paul and then getting handed Anthony Davis and then ruining Anthony Davis's time there and then moving on to Zion. Like, they just have – they've had everything handed to them.
Right.
And have not been able to – even now, it's like you guys have Brandon Ingram, you have CJ McCollum,
yeah.
You have Zion, you have – even Valanciunas is like a decent center – and you guys just can't figure it out for a season. Like,
right.
You have Zion as healthy as ever, and it feels like, I mean, they're still, if anything, they're a bigger question now than I think they've been in the past. People just don't know, are you guys elite, or are you just here for a good time? And they have the talent to do it, man.
They're,
yeah.
They're there for the beignets and some
the word is out.
The word is out.
Zion's definitely
I watched that probably three times over the weekend.
So did you.
Because I had to watch the original. Because I watched the burger one.
Yeah, yeah. Then, what's the burger one again? What does he say? He's like...
The problem with Zion isn't on the court. It's how many burgers.
How many burgers.
How many
it's
burgers.
How many burgers so, he's going to
so,
eat.
Yeah, so now there's a funny. Whole beef between the Pelicans.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. Well. It could be vegan beef as well. With the Pelicans no, and Stephen A. Smith. When we return, Kevin Huerter praises De'Aaron Fox on Andre Iguodala's podcast. The Styles part. And Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
This just dropped, and we have not had enough time to... This came out yesterday. I'm just now seeing it. From Sports Illustrated. And this is from Bob Melvin. New Giants manager Bob Melvin has instituted a new rule for his club in his first year with the franchise, and it's difficult to miss during spring training. Now, I will be down there, so I'll let you know what the setup is, because this whole thing is let me just read it. Melvin is requiring every person in the team's dugout to stand for the national anthem, and he explained why. It's all about the perception that we are out there ready to play, Melvin said, per The Athletic. That's it. You want your team ready to play, and I want the other team to notice it too. It's really as simple as that. Melvin also made it clear his reasoning has nothing to do with politics, which would contrast with the team's former manager, Gabe Kapler, who stopped taking the field during the national anthem in 2022 after the mass shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, and kneeled in protest for several games in 2020 after the killing of George Floyd sparked protests across the country. I'm just trying to figure out, and like I said, I'll be down there. So I want to get, because it sounds like this is a logistic thing. Does not sound like a Colin Kaepernick thing, but I can't confirm until we see, and a lot of these games aren't broadcast. He goes on to say, look, we're a new team here. We got some good players here, Melvin said on Friday per USA Today. It's more about letting the other side know that we're ready to play. I want guys out here ready to go. There's a personality to that. And boy, oh boy, Chris, we do not have enough time.
I am not touching that one.
I thought it was interesting.
I have thoughts.
Right. You cannot.
There's no way we can have a reasonable conversation.
No. Not at the moment. I'll get down there.
Yes.
I think there's
just
a lot of
report back.
There's a lot of moving parts. I think. I don't think it's about standing or sitting. I think it's everybody. I would assume in front, like in Little League. I don't know. That's what I'm imagining. I will definitely, boots on the ground unless I don't end up going, which the plan is to go on Saturday.
Yes.
I will let you all know what the contrast is.
Is it Giants A's?
I believe the game I'm going to is Giants A's.
Okay.
Yes, so I will be there because,
nice.
It obviously this reads a certain way for a reason.
Right, of course.
But It might be Much Ado About Nothing.
Right.
We can't really speak on it.
Yes.
But I did. There was no way I could not say that because we're coming back from break and I say, hey, Chris. And the look on Chris's face.
I was just like, man, like, again.
Chris is like,
what about Kevin Herter? Don't have thoughts. Can we get back to Kevin? I don't think we have enough time. And B, I'm not trying to split half the audience.
No. We are not going down that path. We literally can't figure out what the heck and why that was brought up. But part of me did that just to see the look on Chris's face. I can't lie.
I hope it was worth it.
It was.
I really hope it was worth it. Don't get it confused. I definitely have thoughts. Let's just not. For the sanctity of our own show, let's just not.
Yeah, definitely not right now.
Not right now.
But what is going on right now is a reunion with Matt Chapman and one Bob Melvin as the Giants sign Bob. I did sign Bob Melvin. Yeah. Chris is still laughing.
I'm just laughing.
The Giants sign Matt Chapman to a very non-Scott Boras deal. It is
actually
3 years. The Giants announced it as 1 year because there's an opt-out after every season, which upsets Giants fans. But at the same time, if you're worried about overpaying people, this is really all you can do. Mm-hmm. So essentially, if Matt Chapman balls out, he's gone.
Yes.
Either year.
Right.
If he's just normal, he'll probably stay. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's what's weird. If you get a career year
this
from Matt
Chapman.
This
was the Bellinger contract also.
Basically, this is what people are doing now.
Right.
If you get a career year from Matt Chapman, he's gone. So if you're a Giants fan, you want him to ball out, but not too much.
Yeah, and it's so strange how they're structuring these deals because it's so player friendly, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's only
It's both team because it's player friendly because that's your only other option because you don't want to give them the bag.
I guess that makes sense. The part that doesn't make sense from why I don't understand why so many teams are okay is because if Chapman has a bad year, he's obviously not going to opt out, and you're still paying him the dollar figure that of which you would have paid him if he played well, I guess.
Yes. If you are a organization, you're hoping that whatever numbers he comes up with,
he plays just well enough that those numbers
make sense.
It's worth the money.
Or you hope out of the 3 years, he's right at that line to where the whole projection machine that they're using. Because the only way he leaves...
Yeah.
Right. If he plays under that,
he's staying. We messed up.
You messed up,
but he's still staying.
But if he plays at it, he might still opt in.
Sure.
This is only an issue to me if he balls out this coming season.
If you were going to get a great value.
Exactly. Because if you
it caps your value.
Exactly.
I'm confused by it.
I think in a perfect world, he plays based to your projection.
Yeah.
Which isn't good enough for him to test the waters.
Right.
Then next season he could have a career year and he leaves. I think that's a perfect situation.
Gotcha.
Because you're off the hook. He leaves. Hey, if you want to, he could re-sign on a new contract if he opts out. But I think that would be a perfect world. Mm-hmm. He plays with you, or same thing, just add another year.
Right.
Plays to what you expect in year one. Plays to what you expect in year two. Year three, career
contract year.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
And it's declining as well, right? Where it's 18, 16, and 14 or
something like that.
Okay.
So I think that is the way that you would want to kind of make that happen.
And got it done. That's the important
thing,
right?
You got it done.
Yeah.
Now go get a pitcher. Go get Snell, and hopefully we can really...
Not so fast.
Because there's still... I mean, the Giants have spent the most money.
Yes.
Right? And you can't say that...
Besides the Dodgers,
who are in a different galaxy.
Right.
So if you are a Giants fan, you got to be excited about it. I'm going to be honest with you. Looking at Matt Chapman's stats, really you're hoping for the home run pop between Chapman and Soler because I know nobody cares about batting average anymore, but he is a career 240 hitter.
What's his BABIP, though?
Yeah, his WOBA. You got the WOBA. You got the WOBA plus. His on-base percentage, .330 last season, .324 the season before that, .314 the season before that. OPS 755 last season, 757 the season before that, 716. In Oakland, that's when he was in the eights for the OPS. Home runs, this is why you should be excited, Giants fans. Last season he had 17, and I think they said all of them would have gotten out at Oracle Park, or maybe only one. You have in 2022, the last two seasons, in 2020, besides 2023. So 2021 and 2022, he hit 27 home runs both seasons. So you got to be happy about that. 2020 in the shortened season, he hit 10. And then in 2019, when he was an all-star, he hit 36 dingers. So you're hoping that, where's the beef? Hopefully the beef is in San Francisco. We will hear from Kevin Herter and what he had to say about his Capitán, De'Aaron Fox, the point guard, on the Point Forward podcast. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.